Well, as many of you know, I have been working downstairs the last couple months in the youth department, and it's been very interesting. I have found it's a kind of a growing edge for me, but I think I'm learning new things. I'm really enjoying it. I am falling in love with your children and your grandchildren. They are just delightful to be around. I want to apologize right now for the flutes. We are covering this month expression. You know, we're saying that we're teaching the kids that they are a unique expression of God. And so last week, my idea was that there were various ways of expressing oneself, and the flutes looked like such a cute idea. I bought them, you know, and I had no idea they were quite as shrill as they ended up being. So, so for those of you whose children came home with flutes, Sorry. I was almost expecting phone calls with food. But we are doing this. I think this is a wonderful thing for children, for all of us to know, is that we are unique and wonderful expressions of God. And yet I don't really know that we get that. I think that what happens is that conditioning happens, and we don't realize that. We learn early on that to be acceptable, maybe even to be loved, we have to do certain things. We have to behave in certain ways. We can do or we can't do, you know, such and such. And so we alter maybe the real of us in some ways. The danger in that, of course, is that we lose who we are. Sometimes it takes some of us a long time to figure out again who we are. I know I was an adult, certainly into middle age, 30s, 40s, before I really started thinking, now, who am I? What do I want? I had gone through divorce, and so I wasn't trying to do what my husband wanted to do me to do. Of course, my parents, I wasn't living at home anymore. You know, so we get to those places in our lives when perhaps, like me, well, who am I? What is it I want to do? I don't know. It's a discovery process. This became real obvious to me. I was at a retreat a couple weeks ago. I went to Colorado, beautiful state. I fell in love with the mountains. Oh my gosh, it was gorgeous. The retreat was a spiritual retreat. It was called The Next Step. And one of the activities that we did was they passed around a deck of what were called oracle cards, and we were to choose. We could choose up to three, and they would represent past, present, future, or one, two, or three, however many you wanted to choose. I chose two, and the card I drew I did present and future, and so the present card was so interesting, I thought. It really just resonated as soon as I looked at it. On the card was a picture of a lion in a herd of sheep. And the lion had a sheepskin tied onto its back. The legs of the sheepskin were down the lion's leg, and they were tied on. The lion was just in with the herd. It didn't look mean or threat. It just was in the herd of sheep. And they didn't look frightened by the sheep either, or by the lion. As I got the book and looked to see what it meant, there was one word on the card. It said conditioning. And what I read was, apparently there's a story about a lion who was raised with sheep, and the lion didn't know that it was a lion. It thought it was a sheep because it was raised with the sheep. It tried to be like the sheep. It tried to eat grass. It walked and did everything like the sheep did. You can only imagine that, maybe not feeling quite right about it, but it wasn't until the lion saw itself in a pool of water, saw its reflection in a pool of water, that it realized it wasn't a sheep after all. It was something different. That worked with me. My sun sign is Leo, so which is the lion. You know, so the card was like, wong. And I think what is common with perhaps people of, you know, the boomer generation, I was raised and trained to do what I was told. I was raised to be quiet. You know, to not make a fuss, to you know, to go along. I followed directions really well. I still have a hard time not just, okay, you know, go do that. So I think it's pretty common. It's not just me, not because I'm a Leo, not because I'm a woman, not because I'm of the age that I am. You didn't think I'd tell you. But I think that's very common with a lot of us, is we do what we think we're supposed to do to fit in with the herd or with the crowd. There's Don Miguel Ruiz. I've talked about this before, but how many have read The Four Agreements? Yeah, quite a few. We did a class on it. I love that book. And in that book, he defines an agreement as something that we accept as true about us. So, as a child, if the parents tell the child, "You are so smart," the child's going to believe that probably because this is my parent, and of course my parent is going to not lie to me. They take that, they accept that as true, and it becomes an agreement. Also, likewise, if the parent tells the child, "You are so clumsy," the child also accepts that as true, and it becomes an agreement. It becomes something that the child believes about himself or herself. As you can imagine, as we go through life, we are accumulating all of these agreements, all of these beliefs, in our terminology, about ourselves that may or may not be accurate, but it is the reflection of what someone else has said, and we have accepted them. In Ruiz's book, he goes on to talk about four statements, four very simple but powerful statements that can be used as agreements. And when you start to live them, then these other old false agreements that are no longer serving begin to fall away. It's a powerful little book, but that's not what I'm talking about today. But I did want to talk about the notion of an agreement, a belief, and how that can happen, how we can so easily take on all of these beliefs. It's funny how spirit works. I had a dream about two or three nights ago. And in the dream, my parents, I was living with my parents in our home. In the dream, the home was actually most like my grandmother's house. You know how dreams are, they're not quite accurate. And in the dream, my dad decided that he was going to there was too much stuff in the house, and so he was going to begin to pare it down, take out stuff that we didn't need anymore. So he took out some things, and then he took out a buffet. Does everybody know what a buffet is? That piece of furniture in the dining room. Okay, my grandma used to use a buffet for storage for extra things. I mean, it wasn't, the dishes were in the back cupboard, but the buffet was extra stuff. My dad's having the buffet taken out in my dream, and I'm looking at my mother to see, is this okay? You know, he's taking out the buffet. Is this all right? And as in real life, my mom was like, "Yep, that's fine. That's exactly. Yep, that's good." So, okay, there goes the buffet. Well, then in the dream, there was some more in it, but the highlights that I remembered were then he takes out the refrigerator, and then I'm upset in my dream because this is the refrigerator. You know, you need a refrigerator. I look again at my mom, and she's not saying anything. She's backing him up. Yep, that's what we need to let go of the refrigerator. So in the dream, I was a lot spunkier than I ever was in real life. In the dream, I said that one of them asked me if I wanted a peach, and I said, "Is it cold?" And they said, "No." And I said, "Well, no, I don't want it then." Now I never would have done that in real life. I think that the dream happened for a couple of reasons. One is I've been watching a lot of HGTV, you know, about decorating and all that sort of thing. And second, because this talk was in the process. It was bubbling and so forth. And I think what it means is, in my opinion, when we stop doing something that is part of us, but we stop doing it because we believe, we have an agreement that that's not an appropriate thing or an acceptable thing, it's like you lop it off. You know. So imagine someone with Joni's skill and talent for drawing, and if somebody said to you as a child, "Oh, you're a terrible artist," and so you just just stop. You don't do it anymore. There's a piece of Joni that is missing, has been missing since childhood because it wasn't acceptable to keep it. So I think the dream was about those pieces of ourselves that are integral to who and what we are. That's my analysis anyway. Well, a couple of days ago, a new friend that I made at the retreat, actually, we were talking, I mentioned that I was going to be speaking today, and she said conversationally, what are you talking about? And I said, actually, I'm talking about authenticity, to, you know, being one's authentic self. And we talked a little bit, and then she said, well, how do you do that? Well, it was a great catalyst for thinking about, well, how do you do that? So what I described to her was my process. I don't know what's going to work for you guys. I really don't. It has been a process for me. From that time in my 30s or 40s or whenever it was when I realized that I really don't know Sharon all that well, I began to a process. But what I likened it to in my conversation with her was when you're kids and you catch lightning bugs. I don't know about you, but we used to, it was fun. It was a big time to go out and catch lightning bugs. Mom would give us a jar, and holes would be punched in the top of the lid, and we'd go around and catch lightning bugs. Now, if you think about how you catch a lightning bug, it isn't obvious where it is, so you have to become still, and you wait for the light. It lights up, and then you move toward it, and of course it goes out again, so you're closer now, and you wait, and it lights up again, and then you move closer again, and finally you catch it. I think that's kind of like the process of discovering yourself. I think it works in much the same way. We have to become still. We have to begin to notice, you know, what is light, what feels like light, what feels true about ourselves. Pardon me. So that takes me to the how-to. Again, I can't tell you, but what will work for you for sure, but what worked for me and is working, because it is a process. I'm still uncovering and still discovering who authentic Sharon is. But that first part is becoming still. It's, I think, when something comes up in my life that you know, I either need to take some action or make a decision, you know, some juncture. If there's no emotion about it, that's the part about being still. If there's no emotion about it, it's okay, well then I'll do this or this. When there is some sort of something, an anxiety, maybe fear, anger, something happens in there, that's a clue for me to become still and to try to pay attention to what's happening. If someone said, would you like to go to the movie with me on Thursday? And yes, I would love to go to the movie, and I like this person a whole lot, and at the same time, I've already agreed to do something else on Thursday, and I feel that little, I have an opportunity there to stop and take a look at what's causing that. You know? It could be just a conflict of, I'd really like to do this, but I've always already promised this. Take a look at what it is, and then you make the decision based on what you think is the closest to what you really want to do. What's the best for you? In my example, in my case, if I have given my word for something, that's important to me, to keep my word. So no matter how much I like the person or I would like to go on that outing, I will probably feel best about myself, feel most authentic, if I stick to my values of keeping my word, as an example. The first is be still. Second is listen for what seems true for you. The third, then, is to try and try again. When I had my son, I remember I was in IT. I was in data processing. I was a programmer. And so I was used to if this, then this. That's my mind tends to be logical. And I really expected that there would be some kind of book or something that would tell me how to raise children. I went out and bought Dr. Spock. Nope, there was nothing. Very quickly, I learned that it is trial and error, that the baby cries, okay, you pick it up, you check the diapers. The diaper's clean. When was the last time the baby ate? You just keep trying things. Same with this. If you're discovering your authentic self, try something. You know, see how it feels to go down this road for a little bit. You know, maybe I would have said to the Thursday night person, oh, I'm sorry, I can't make it, and agreed to go to the movies with my friend. But then as the week goes on, I'm not going to feel good about it. You know, keep trying. Just try things on. It's a learning process. And then the last step, the fourth step, is what I call become your own best friend. Imagine that you've just met someone, and you know how when you meet somebody, sometimes there's kind of like a click, or you instantly know that you like this person and you'd like to get to know them better. When that happens, then you begin to spend time with the person, you talk with them, you have lunch maybe, or you ask questions, you listen, you talk. It's a sharing. You begin to learn about each other. What if we were to begin to be our own best friends? What if we were to begin to ask ourselves questions? Well, what do you want to do, Sharon? Instead of just routinely saying, I don't care, you can pick a place. Think about it. What would I like to do? Where would I like to go? What would be the best thing that could happen to me in this moment? Become your own best friend. Listen to yourself. So if you do this process to uncover your authentic self more clearly, what's really happening? I think one thing that's really happening is that, well, we already know that in Unity we teach that higher self, that inner voice, what we call in Unity the Christ within, that's always present. So that's part of what's happening. Another thing that's always happening is sometimes that voice, that Christ within, has become pretty obscured. You know, depending on how many of those beliefs we've piled on, that light might be pretty dim. But I think what you'll discover is you will begin to discover the sound of your own small, still voice. How many are parents in here? Parents, lots. I found it amazing, maybe you did too, that it didn't take very long for me to recognize my child's cry compared to everyone else's. You know, there can be a whole room of kids, but you recognize your own child's cry, right? It's amazing how that happens. The same with your still small voice. You're going to have at least one other voice competing with it. We've talked before about monkey mind. We've talked about ego, you know. So sometimes it's difficult, especially in the beginning, to decide, now, is this me? Is this my higher self? Is this the authentic me? Or is this ego, you know, saying, nah, forget about the Thursday night thing, go ahead and go with your friend, you know. Who is it? A couple of things you can do is the ego is going to most likely be disruptive, is most likely going to be defensive, most likely going to be a win-lose kind of attitude. The ego wants to have control, so that's a way that you can kind of judge. But you will learn to tell which is your still small voice and which is ego. What else happens? The more you practice this process, the more you pull out that authentic person, the more you identify that authentic person, the better you'll get at it. And the better you get at it, the better you'll feel. If you have, at some point in your life, stopped doing something that was as important as a refrigerator is to most of us, when you can reclaim that, when you can reclaim your own voice again, you just, you feel better. You are more whole. Of course you feel better. We could even stop right there and say, you know, you're learning to be authentic. And I will say then, as a spiritual person, if you take it a step further, if you add prayer, regular prayer and meditation to your daily routine, what you'll find is there's extra power in that still small voice, extra ability to hear it. It's like you're plugged into source. So a lot more can happen when you have that flow going for you too. It's sort of like it accelerates the whole process for you. It's a great thing. And I would recommend that you do that, because what we know, what we teach, what we believe here is that each and every one of us are unique, just like we're teaching the kids downstairs or working on. You are unique, you are wonderful, you are a creation, a beloved creation of God. You are a wonderful expression of the universe. That is the truth of our being. We are spiritual beings having a human experience. And as we allow ourselves to know that, to feel that, to be that, our lives will change. So I want you to imagine, I want you first of all to imagine that each and every morning you awake and you automatically check in, you automatically turn within to say, what shall we do today? Imagine that every action that you take during the day, every task that you have to perform is done consistent with your values and your beliefs, is in integrity with your higher self. Imagine then that your self-awareness grows. You begin to feel confident. You begin to be accepting and loving. Because what I've noticed about myself, when I am accepting of myself in some aspect, I am accepting of other people in that same aspect. So the more we are accepting and loving of ourselves, the more we can offer that to other people. You are free to be yourself, and so is everyone else. You become fully aware of your strengths and your gifts to this world, and you realize that you have a unique contribution to give. You really know that you are a magnificent creation of God. I invite you then to choose to be authentic. I invite you to practice learning who you are. I invite you to choose to be all that you have come here to be. Let's pray about this. As we take the time to turn within, we recognize and know that God is there, that we have connected with Source, and we fully know and love the fact that God is all-powerful. We know that there is only one presence and one power in the universe and at work in our lives, God the good, omnipotent. Will you join me? There is only one presence and one power in the universe and at work in my life, God the good, omnipotent. And so it is. Amen.